Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Ksubas Daf Ayin Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur from the top line of Daf Ayin Aleph. The Gemara opens up with a quote from the Mishnah on Daf Ayin, the first Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bisrael, Chodesh Echad Yekayim. In the case of a husband that had vowed not to provide benefit to his wife, if it's a husband that's a Yisrael as opposed to a Kohen, so they continue up till a month. Beyond that, they are to be divorced. The Gemara asks, this amount of time, namely a Chodesh, Hainu Tanakama. This seems to be the opinion of the Tanakama as well. So why the repeat? Generally, when you have an additional opinion in the Mishnah, he is there to argue with that which was stated beforehand. But here, the Tanakhama already mentioned that. The Tanakhama said, Ad Shloshim Yom, Shloshim in 30 days, that's a month. So, Omar Abai, Kohenes Osash Mina. And Abai says that Rabbi Yehuda's role in the Mishnah is really to introduce the idea of a woman married to a Kohen who had vowed. And there you see a 2-month figure. Rava Omar, Chodesh Mole v'Chodesh Choser Iko Binayu. In the Jewish calendar, which is based on the lunar cycle, the months alternate between 29-day months and 30-day months. So that the Tanakhama, who had mentioned 30 days, that is considered the amount of time up to which the couple would remain together. According to Rabbi Yehuda, by using the term chodesh, that could mean, in fact, a day less, 1 day less, 29 days. On the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei mivne heading, a topic heading combined with a structural note. You notice there's an aleph and a beis that appear in diamonds. These are Shnei Machloikesim, Rav Ushmuel, two times that you see a controversy between Rav and Shmuel b'neder stam, lo nokat l'kama zman, where a neder, a vow, is taken without any time frame attached to the vow. Im gam bozeh yesh din lahamtin o yoytzi l'alter. Is, in this case, the need for waiting, in other words, do we say that the couple shall remain together, or since no time frame was attached to the vow, they are to split up immediately. So once again, in this piece of Gemara, you're going to see Rav and Shmuel arguing over this topic, a vow without a time frame, and their argument appears twice. And the Gemara will have to deal with the need for teaching the same concept twice. The Gemara, Omar Rav, Lo Shanu Elo B'Meforesh. The Mishnah that speaks about the couple having to split up, but only after a waiting period. That concept of a waiting period is taught only B'Meforesh, where the husband, when he vowed, he spelled out the number, the amount of time that the vow is to be applicable. Avol bistam, if the husband vows, that he vows that his wife is not to receive any benefit from him, and doesn't mention how long, just leaves it at that. Yotzi la'alter v'yitain ksuba. A divorce is to be immediate, and he pays her, he compensates her the ksuba payment. Ushmuel Omar, Afilu Bistam Loy Yoitzi, even where the neder is stam, without a time frame attached to it, the divorce is not to be immediate. Shemo Yimtzo Pesach Linidro. By allowing the couple to remain together, we're hopeful that he might find an opening, literally speaking. An opening is an approach through which the neder can be absolved. You notice that we now have a bracketed section, and on the side there's a starred note. Achrei ha-sugrayim, after the brackets, ha-gemora makshe al Shmuel. The Gemara will raise a challenge, a question on Shmuel. Shelo chilek bein stam l'meforesh. Shmuel did not make any distinction between vows that are stated without a time frame attached versus those that are time-based. B'shneim yamtin. In both cases, there is a delay. And now, the question that the Gemara will ask on Shmuel's approach, the question will be from the middle section of our Mishnah, the Katoni Shiyotzi L'Alter, that there is an immediate need for divorce. So according to Shmuel, there's no scenario of an immediate divorce. And in our Mishnah, there seems to be a reference to such a phenomenon. The note continues, B'socha Sugrayim, within the brackets, Hagemora She'eles, the Rabbi Shmuel Kfar Choku B'Neisei Zeh, Chadazimna. These opinions, Rav and Shmuel, have already argued on this topic once. Umitaretzes im Srichusa, the Gemara then will answer with the standard Talmudic response of you need. Srichusa means you need both cases over which they argue. So in other words, you need to be taught their controversy twice. So now, that having been said, we're going to go through the Gemara straight through the bracketed section, realizing that after the brackets, the Gemara is going to present a kasha, a problem, a difficulty for Shmuel. The Gemara. Note, by the way, the length of the bracketed section, and the fact that we're opening now with a long question, followed by a tsrichusa, a tsricha answer that we call a long answer. So the Gemara says, V'hoi fligu bo chadazimna. Rav and Shmuel have already argued over this situation of a vow that has no time frame attached to it, where Rav would say they have to split up immediately, and Shmuel says give them a chance, wait it out for a certain amount of time there too. So, disnan, hamadir es ishto mitasha shamita. A man formulated a vow whereby the couple would not be able to engage in intimacy. Beis Shammai omrim shtei shabbosos, ubeis Hillel omrim shabbos achas. Beis Shammai says the couple are to stick it out for 2 weeks, and Beis Hillel says 1 week. V'yoma Rav, machlokes v'meforesh. The machlokes Beis Shammai's Hillel is where he spelled out the time that he wants his vow to be in effect. Avol bistam, if he just vows without any reference to time, yotzi la'alter v'yitein ksuba. He is to divorce her immediately and pay her the ksuba payment. Ushmuel omar afilu bistam nami lo yotzi. Even without a time frame attached, no immediate divorce, shemo yimtza pesach nidro. He might find an opening, a way to have a sage absolve him of the vow. So here you go. Rav and Shmuel, same kind of argument. Why is it necessary to repeat it? Tzricha. I need both scenarios. De'i itmar bahi. In the case of, had we been told there, machloikas, in the case of the vow concerning intimacy, Bahi ka'oma Rav. There, Rav says, if without a time frame, they must split up immediately. Mishum delo efshir b'parnas. There's no way for them to continue together through the services of a parnas, of an intermediary. That's fairly obvious. You're dealing with the intimacy between man and wife. You can't have an intermediary providing her with the services. Avol b'ha, in the case of someone like in our sukya, our mishnah, of a husband vowing not to provide food for the wife, in this kind of situation, de'efshir b'parnas, her food provisions can be made through an intermediary. Ema moda le l'shmuel. There is reason for me to think that that Rav might have conceded to Shmuel that why split the couple up immediately? Let them wait a little bit. Maybe he'll find an opening. So that even in a stam case, Rav would concede to wait. Therefore, had we taught the machlokas Rav and Shmuel only in the case of Madir Mitashmish, I would not have known Rav's position. I would have thought something other than what we know Rav to hold. V'itmar Baha, and had we taught the controversy in the case of the neder preventing Mizonos, Baha Kamar Shmuel. Here Shmuel would say, wait, Mishum Defsha Baparnas. Because the couple can remain together through the intervention or the services provided by the intermediary. Avo Bahi, in the case of Madir from Tashmish, Emo Moda Leila Rav. I would have thought that Shmuel would concede to Rav that without a time element attached to the vow, the couple must split up immediately. Tzricho, therefore, I have to teach that controversy as well, so as not to come to that erroneous conclusion. Tanan. Now, as we mentioned earlier, this is a quote from the middle section of our Mishnah, Daf Ayin Amud Aleph, and it's going to be a question on Shmuel. Shmuel had said that under all circumstances, when a husband vows, the couple do not split up immediately, whether there's a time frame attached or not. There's always yamtin, always waiting. So now we quote from our Mishnah, Hamadiris Ishto Shelo Titom Echod Mikol HaPeros, a man through a vow prevents his wife from eating a certain kind of fruit. Yotzi V'yitain Ksuba. That implies immediate, that he has to divorce her and pay her the Ksuba. Bishama L'Rav. As far as Rav is concerned, here you have a Tanaic quote involving immediate divorce. Does Rav have a possibility of immediate divorce? Yes. Kan Bistam, here the Mitzia, this middle section of the Mishnah that was just quoted is without any time frame associated with the vow. Kan, the Resha B'meforesh, the Resha of the Mishnah was a case where he spelled out the time frame, and hence you saw in the Mishnah the idea of waiting. Aval L'Shmuel, Kasha, but according to Shmuel, that in all cases of neder, even in Stam, there's waiting. How do you explain this section of the Mishnah, which indicates an immediate divorce? The Gemara answers, Hocha b'mayaskinon. This middle section of the Mishnah is not talking about a straightforward case of the husband vowing. When a husband vows, when the husband initiates a vow, as far as Shmuel is concerned, there's always going to be a waiting period. However, what is taking place here is kigoyin shenodra he v'kiyem lo ihu. The woman, the wife, made the vow, and the husband, instead of voiding it through hafora, he verified it. He substantiated it. He validated her vow. So the fact that he validates the vow, that is reason for his paying her the ksuba. However, in this discussion, we want to emphasize she initiated the vow. And if we look at Rashi, the kosovar, we should say shenodrahi, on the fourth line from the top, Uma, if she made the vow, Uma yesh lo od lahamtin. What reason for him is there to wait? I nicho lo ledida lemishkal ksuba sa umepak. If she wants this to take the getter ksuba and leave the marriage, lo tevakesh pesach lenidra. She's not going to seek out an opening of a way of absolving the vow. But where the husband initiated the vow, like in the case of preventing her from getting benefit from him, yamkin, let's wait. Maybe he'll find an opening for the vow. So there's a we'll say a qualitative difference in the case where she initiates the vow. You can see that she's internally motivated to leave this marriage. And therefore, the thinking that an opening is going to be found, a desire even to have the vow absolved, is non-existent. In contrast to a case where the husband had vowed, the wife will plead with him, maybe you can have the vow rescinded, and that's good reason to keep the couple together, even in a stam situation. Now, there's further explanation on this in this case of where she initiated the vow. That is, we emphasized up till this point, is in such a case, even Shmuel will agree that they split up immediately. As far as what might bother you is that, well, if she initiated the vow, why does she get any ksuba payment? Well, first of all, the husband, validated the vow. The Kosova, Rebbe Meir, his name didn't appear in this quote, but an unnamed Mishnah is assumed to be Rebbe Meir. Hu noisein etzba bein shineha. That's an expression which, for our purposes, would mean that he, the husband, is responsible for the vow. Now, what do we mean he's responsible for the vow? To the extent that as a result of this, he must pay the ksuba. That's an explanation of his need to pay the ksuba. However, I don't know if that's really what we have to emphasize at this point, but what we do emphasize is that since she initiated the vow, that's why there is no waiting, and Shmuel understands, he concedes to that. On the side of the Gemara, we have a katnoseh, it's a subtopic heading, it means we're staying in the topic, and we read as follows, our note, Isha Shinodru, Baila Shoma Vishosak. A woman who initiated the vow, and the husband heard it, and he kept quiet. That's tantamount to his validating it. Hayim ze nechshav kilu hu nodar. Is it considered as if he made the vow? Hu nosan etzba ben shineo? That would be as if he is responsible for the vow. Oh, shizu nodra. We say shizu nidra. He nosna etzba ben shineo. That she made the neder, and as a result, she is responsible for it. Even though the husband could have done something about it and didn't, nevertheless, she is the one held responsible. He nosna etzba mishina. That's the alternative expression, and we'll be seeing that as we go on in the Gemara. We have diamonds that will appear, and under the mivne heading, biur shitos tanoim, the Gemara will be, let's say, trying to analyze, clarify the different Tanaic opinions on this matter. And the double underline, you will see, highlights tikune makoros. In other words, as we go on in the Gemara, we're going to be presented with Tanaic sources. But as the Tanaic sources will be problematic, you'll see a redoing of the Tanaic sources. And each time you see the double underline, that is what the Gemara is engaged in. So now the Gemara. V'sova Rebbe Meir hu nosein etzba bein shineha. It's just to review that we had to say what we did in order to explain the mitzi of the Mishnah so as to avert any difficulties for Shmuel. This approach, therefore, has to be reliable. Now, if we question this approach, then it's like a stack of cards or a row of dominoes that are set up. Everything's going to fall apart. So we have to make sure that we can maintain this approach. So now we're bringing it into question. The Sava Rebbe Meir, and I want to make a point that will have importance later on, that the assumption that the Mitziasa is Rebbe Meir is what the Gemara is working with. That's because it's an unnamed section. It's a Stam Mishnah, which is associated with Rebbe Meir. So we're going to question, does Rebbe Meir really hold Hu Noisein Etzba Ben Shinela? That when a woman vows and the husband validates it, it's considered as if he is responsible. V'ha Tanya, Ha'isha shenadra b'nazir v'shama b'ayla v'lo hefer law. A woman accepted a vow of Nazirite-ship. Nazirite-ship is one who forswears benefiting from grape or vine products, and that entails other halachas like the prohibition of defilement to the dead. So a woman accepted upon herself the Nazirite, the Nazir vow, and the husband heard it and he did not void it. Rabbi Meir of Rabbi Yehuda Oimrim, he nosna etzba bein shinehot. Note the markings, dashed underlining of Rabbi Meir, and the phrase he nosna etzba bein shinehot. Lefikoch im rotza baal lehofer yofer. Therefore, if he wants to absolve the vow, he can do so. Pimomar yefshi bishan adranis. And if he says, I cannot live with a vowing type woman, teitzei shelo b'ksuba, she will be divorced and does not receive the ksuba. And as we said before, this phrase he nosna u nosan etzba ben shina, this has to do with who is ultimately responsible for the vow, with the practical ramifications of, is she going to get a ksuba payment or not? Well, here you see very clearly that Rabbi Meir is associated with the idea of he is she, he nosna etzba bein shina. She put her finger between her teeth, but which means she holds responsibility. Contrast this with what we had seen under Rabbi Meir's name just three lines above. Rabbi Meir was dashed underline, but there it said, who knows Saint Ezra and Shinoza? Hence, we have a problem right now. The source goes on with more Tanaic opinions. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Lozer, Omrim, who knows Saint Ezra and Shinoza? The husband who heard it and didn't absolve it, he is responsible. Lefikoch im rotza baal lehofer yofer. If he should want to absolve it, he can do so, provided he does so upon hearing the vow within the same day. V'im omar yefshi b'isha nadranis, and if he declares, I can't live with a vowing woman, Yotzi v'yitang suba, he's to divorce her, but he has to pay the ksuba. Again, the question is very focused. What is Shitas Rebbe Meir? In order to preserve our explanation above of the middle section of the Mishnah, it was important to say that Rebbe Meir holds who knows Saint Etzba and Shina, and with that we would understand what it said in the Mitzios of the Mishnah, Yotzi v'yitang ksuba, that he pays the ksuba, because he is responsible. All right, Epoch. So switch things around and have the source read the Nozir source. Read Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda Omrim, who nosein, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Lozer Omrim, he nosna. Here it's quite a brief recounting of the source in the switched around version, but it's the same source, just quoted in an abbreviated fashion, with Rabbi Meir saying who nosein, which matches the answer we gave above on behalf of Shmuel. So things are fine. Question. With having done this switch around, we have to pay attention to the other Tanaic opinions and investigate if this really is accurate. The Sava Rabbi Yossi, he nosna. By switching around the Nozir source, you're now telling us that Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that he nosna, that in the vowing situation where she vowed and he substantiated it, the husband validated it, she is nevertheless considered responsible. V'atnan, Rabbi Yossi oimer, be'aniyos, sheloi nosan kitzva. This is a quote from our Mishnah, where a vow was made not to benefit from cosmetics. And Rabbi Yossi says, with regard to anios, so, and we explained the Mishnah as a case where she vowed and he substantiated it. And the Mishnah, this brief quote, means that in the case of the poor girls, it's yoytzi v'yiteng suba. There's a divorce has to take place, and the ksuba payment is made. That's all we have to know for right now, which means that according to Rabbi Yossi, if the ksuba payment is being made, it's a case of who knows sein etzba bein shinel. We glance at Rashi. Rashi is a little less than halfway down the Rashi column, or almost halfway down. Banios shelo nosan kitzva yotzi viten ksuba. He has to divorce her and pay the ksuba. Alma hu nosein da benodra hi v'kiem hu ukim tola masnisen. We said that the Mishnah was talking about that kind of vow situation where the woman vowed and the husband substantiated it. And here you have Rabbi Yossi saying that a ksuba payment is made. So the Gemara says, well, Amal. So that with regard to the Nozir source above, where we saw the two sets of Tanoim, we've got to redo it again. Amos say as follows, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yossi, Omrim, Hu, Nosein, that along with Rabbi Meir that we already had switched around, put Rabbi Yossi together with Rabbi Meir, and he too says, Hu, Nosein. Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Lazar, Omrim, He, Nosna. Once again, if you switch things around, you've got to make sure that things are accurate. So the Gemara asks, now that we've set up the source totally switched around, we've got now Rabbi Yehuda holding that where she vows and the husband validates, she, the wife, is responsible for the vow, with the lack of ksuba payment eventually being made as a result of that. So the Gemara asks, V'savra Buda he nosna v'hotnan. We learned in our Mishnah, Rebuta Omer, B'Yisrael, Yoim Echod Yekayim. More than that, Yotzi v'yitein ksuba. That's as far as Rebuta is concerned, that there will be a divorce, and there will be a ksuba payment. So Rebuta can't be switched around to say that he nosna. Or you notice you can't present Rabbi Yehuda as saying what appeared to be in the switching around that he nosna. So Ema, so rather say Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Yehuda v'Rabbi Yossi Omrim, all three hold who nosein. The Rebbe Lazar, by himself, Omer, he nosna. Ve'im timtsiloimar zugi zugi kotani. And you might insist that the source where we featured the Nozir vow is a source that features the Tanoim in pairs. Zugi means pairs. So that this most recent approach of having three against one just is untenable. So Amal, so then say as follows. Rabbi Meir v'Rabbi Elazar Omrim he nosna. Along with Rabbi Elazar, we can have Rabbi Meir holding that she is responsible. Rabbi Huda v'Rabbi Yossi Omrim who nosein. With that, so the opinions of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Yossi will be fine. The only difficulty in doing this is having Rabbi Meir hold he nosna. What's the problem in having Rabbi Meir say he nosna? Is it not so that above, when we were defending Shmuel, referring to the Mitziyasa of the Mishnah, we had to say that the Mitziyasa was authored by Rabbi Meir, who holds who nosein in order to explain why there is a ksuba payment, the husband is responsible. In the Mitziyasa, there was no name. The absence of a name led us to say that is Rabbi Meir. And the Mitziyasa was explained, as we said, as Hu Nosein Etzba Bein Shinel. So Rabbi Meir, the unnamed Mishnah, is Hu Nosein. Here, we're pairing Rabbi Meir up with Rabbi Elazar holding He Nosna. The Gemara says that's not the end of the problem. That's not a problem. Why? The Ha Stamah, The stama that we referred to above, you can use the arrow to navigate to what we saw above. The stam mishnah, that mitzvah, says delok Rabbi Meir. It's within the realm of possibility that an unnamed mishnah can be in fact authored by someone else. So we're not locked in to saying it has to be Rabbi Meir. So with all of this, Shmuel's approach to vows, does the couple wait it out for a period of time or not? Shmuel's approach is acceptable, that when the husband initiates the vow, then we don't make any distinction with regard to a vow with a time frame attached versus one without. There will always be a waiting period. However, where she initiates the vow, then the Shmuel will concede to the teaching that we saw in the Mishnah. Of course, Shmuel's an Amora, so he'll have to concede to the Mishnah that says there is an immediate divorce. As you can see, we have a new marking. And on the side of the more, we have a Nosei Mivneh heading. The house shape that you see, which will appear in alternating directions, is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of a give-and-take style Gemara. The roof of the house pointing upwards represents Kushyo's questions. The inverted is Tshuva's responses. And we'll be involved with a Birur Shitas Rabbi Yossi Binyan Ezin Edor and Baal Yochel Lahafer regarding what kind of vows can a husband absolve? Can a husband absolve his wife's vows? Now, the Gemara. The Gemara opens up with a reference to that which we saw just a few lines up, really a quote from our Mishnah that had to do with women and they're vowing not to benefit from cosmetics. And we saw Rabbi Yossi referring to this situation that with regard to the poor girls, where no amount of time was stated, so the couple must get divorced. And as a result of that, the couple gets divorced and the husband pays the ksuba, indicating that it's a kind of vow that he could have annulled, he could have voided, but didn't. And as we explained, as a result of that, he is held responsible for the vow, and hence he has to compensate the wife that is getting divorced with a ksuba payment. And now we ask, V'sova Rabbi Yossi banios shelo yiten kitzba. This is a very abbreviated question in terms of the heart of the question. You don't see it spelled out, but the question is, does Rabbi Yossi hold that in the case of the poor women who vowed not to benefit from cosmetics, that the couple is to be separated, divorced, and he pays the ksuba? By the fact that we're saying that he has to pay the ksuba, alma baal motzi mefer, that it's a type of vow that the husband could have done something about and he didn't, so he is held responsible. But is that really so, that the husband could have annulled that kind of vow, a vow concerning kishut? Kishut has to do with the woman adorning herself with cosmetics. Veraminu, we present a Tanaic source that seems to contradict that which we've said. This Tanaic source goes to the top of Amud Beis, and you'll note that Rabbi Yossi's name is underlined in this source. What does it say? Elu Dvorim Shabal Mefer. The following are the kind of vows that a husband has jurisdiction over, meaning that he could absolve them. Dvorim Shiesh Bohen Inui Nefesh. Those kind of vows that create a feeling of, we'll say, of pain, of discomfort. For example, im erchatz, im lo erchatz. Now the language here is a little difficult to understand without the background that Rashi gives from the Gemara in the Dorim, where the im erchatz in effect is a vow where she says that she is she's prohibiting herself from the benefit of bathing. That's im erchatz, and im lo erchatz is a reference to an oath, a shvua. She swears that she will not bathe. So that the expression of Ir Merchatz is a reference to a neder, and Im Lo Erchatz is a reference to a shvua. There are different types of, we'll call it, of verbalization, of vowing, of swearing that we recognize in Halacha. Emir Sashem in Maseches, in Nedarim, this topic is discussed at greater length. It's not important for us right now. We continue, Im Eskashet, Im Lo Eskashet. Similarly, the vow of kishut is in the realm of inui nefesh, according to the Tanakhama. If she vows that she will not benefit from the pleasure of having the cosmetic supply, and she swears not to put on cosmetics. Oma Reb Yossi, and here's what we really have to focus on. Ein Elu Nidre Inui Nefesh. And we squiggle under the Ein, this is the crux of the question, the problem. He says that Kishut, which we had dashed underlined at the beginning of the line, which is our topic, is not in the realm of Nidre Inui Nefesh. The husband has reign over Nidorim that are inui nefesh based, and that's derived from the verse that says la nois nefesh, and Rashi quotes that. So according to Rabbi Yossi, if these vows of bathing or of cosmetics don't fall under the realm of inui nefesh, what does? V'eluhein nidre inui nefesh, shelo ochal basar. She vows not to eat meat, v'shalesh dayai, not to drink wine, v'shalo es kashet bevigdei, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, bevigdei tzivoinim. She vows not to wear colorful clothing. Well, so that is a problem for us, because in our Mishnah, it seems that the neder of kishut is something that the Baal has control over, hence it would be called the realm of inui nefesh. And in this source, the kishut-based vow, according to the same Reb Yossi, is something the Baal has no reign over. The Gemara answers, Hocha b'mayaskinon, the kishut of our Mishnah is bidvarim shebeino leveino. There's another realm of vows that the husband has jurisdiction over, and those are vows that affect him as well. Beino leveino means between him and her. And the kishut referred to in the Mishnah has to do with hair removal, the use of a depilatory. And for the husband, this is something of significance. And when we speak about the hair, we're talking about hair in the, we'll say, in the female gender area. The Gemara says, ha nicha, to suggest that this is the kishut that our Mishnah is referring to and can be absolved, ha nicha l'man domar dvorim shebeino leveino habal mefer. That will make sense according to the opinion. This very point is controversial. So the approach we've stated works out according to the opinion that classifies this kind of kishut, this hair removal issue, as in the realm of Dvarim Shebeino Leveino, the husband can mefer el lamandar me'ena baal mefer. According to the opinion that says that a husband cannot absolve this kind of vow, my ikol lameimar, then how are you going to explain our Mishnah? Because our Mishnah clearly describes a vow of kishut that a baal is able to absolve, and if he doesn't, he has to pay the ksuba. So according to that opinion, that the baal cannot be mefer, what explanation are you going to offer for the Mishnah? So the right after this bracketed section, you therefore have an alternative response. in order to address the Man de Omar, the opinion that says that the Baal cannot be mefer the Dvarim Shebeino Leveino. We didn't explain totally to the point that the term Dvarim Shebeino Leveino is a reference specifically to this issue of a depilatory, the hair removal material. So now let's go over the Gemara with the bracketed section, which gives you the background to these two opinions. The Itmar, Dvarim Shebeino Leveino, a vow concerning the use of the depilatory. If, let us say, the woman had vowed that she is not going to use that, and the husband hears that, Rav Huna Omar, Habal Mefer, that is something that the husband has control over. He could mefer it. And if he doesn't, so the ksuba payment will have to be made on his part, which is how we explained the Mishnah. Rav Ado Bar Avo Omar Ein Habal Mefer. It's not the kind of vow that the husband has a right to absolve. And the reason for that is that the husband can continue living with his wife even if she is not going to use this depilatory. Shalomotzinu shual shemeis ba'afar pir. Before we translate that, it means that a husband who is familiar with his wife will be able to manage even if she does not use that depilatory. And the translation is, we haven't found a fox who lives in burrows that he holes in the ground, that the fox dies in the dirt of his foxhole. So it's another way of saying that a husband will be able to manage even if there is hair growth over there. So according to Rav Ado Bar Avo, this is not the type of vow that a husband has control over. So how are we going to explain the Mishnah, which spoke about the kishut vow that a husband is expected to be able to absolve? Elahocha b'mayaskinon. This is a second approach to the kishut of our Mishnah. Kigon de talinu lekishutel betashmish hamita de omra. She made the issue of the cosmetics dependent on intimacy. What did she say? Yeoser hanoas tashmishcha olai imes kashet. She prohibits herself from enjoying the act of intimacy that she derives from her husband if she will adorn herself. And the point is, she might adorn herself and then become usher in tashmish amita and then become usher in intimacy. So therefore, the husband has control over this kind of vow. It has direct, influence on his own ability to live with her. We see again a bracketed section. The brackets are explained on the side. Besochasagraim muva hareka lechuvazu. Within the brackets, the Gemara gives background to this response. Miad achrei sagraim, a Gemara mamshicha im shelus lechuvas. Right afterwards, after the brackets, the Gemara continues with a give and take on this very topic. So the Gemara, right after the brackets, asks, the lotis kashet, let her not use the cosmetics, velote aser, and she, in that way, she wouldn't become usher to her husband. And if we look at Rashi, it's very helpful. Rashi says, velotis kashet, velote aser, l'Rav Yossi, according to Rav Yossi, kevan de omar, ein elu nidre inui nefesh, since he said that these are not nidre inui nefesh, we saw Rav Yossi speak about bathing and kishut and cosmetics as not being nidre inui nefesh. And here she's making a neder citing the use of cosmetics, that if she were to use cosmetics, so then her ability to participate in intimacy will become prohibited. So according to Rabbi Yossi, that said that the realm of cosmetics does not fall under the heading of inui nefesh, how can the husband absolve such a vow? And if you'll say, well, but it's she ties it into intimacy. And then, of course, the husband has a direct stake in that, and therefore he can absolve it. Not so. Lo tiskashi v'lo te'aser. There's an alternative approach. Let us tell this woman, well, lady, do not adorn yourself, and with that, you won't become usur in tashmish. You won't become usur in intimacy. The Gemara says, that's not an option. Im kein koru la menuvelis. If that be the case, they're going to call her menuvels, disgusting one, a lady that doesn't tend to any of her cosmetic needs. They'll embarrass her, they'll shame her, and as a result of the shame, she's going to put on the cosmetics, and that will kick in the netter will kick in, and therefore the husband is able to absolve this based on it being a vow that is dvarim shebeino leveino, is something that directly affects him. The Gemara asks, v'tiskashet, v'teoser, okay, let her put on the cosmetics, let her become osur in tashe shamita, ila beis shamai shtei shabosus, ila beis hillel, shabos echad. The question here is focused on the fact that the Mishnah Rabbi Yossi had taught that the couple has to break up immediately. Why? Why does the couple have to break up immediately? Let her put on the cosmetics and become usur, but we know that when the nether goes into effect, according to Beis Shammai, the couple stays together for 2 weeks, according to Beis Hillel for 1 week. Why the insistence on immediate split up? The Gemara says, Hani Mili, we can say this, that we wait. Hecha de Odra Ihu. That's where the man initiated the vow. The Savra, the wife figures, Mirsach Rasach Iluvoi. He's just angry at me, and that's why he's vowing. Vahashta Moisiv Daite. And in the meantime, shortly thereafter, he'll calm down. Aval Hocha de Nodra Ihi. But in this case, the Kishut case, where she made the vow, that's how we explained our Mishnah, where she made the vow, Vishosik law, and he keeps quiet, Savra, she calculates, she figures me the Ishtik, Misna u de Sonili. His silence is indicative of his hating me. And there's something very profound in this Gemara, and that is that a couple, husbands and wives, as is only too often, we know that from this Gemara, on Daf Samach Aleph, we saw this, that it's common for husbands to, in fact, become angry at their wives. Nevertheless, anger and hatred are not one and the same. Anger comes from some type of momentary displeasure, but it's a passing phenomenon. Hatred, though, is something that we cannot tolerate, we can't accept as something that will exist between a married couple. And when you have the hate factor, that's grounds for immediate splitting up. Now, we didn't forget, we skipped a few lines of Gemara above. Let's go back over that. It was very important for us to keep track of this give and take, otherwise we would have lost the flow, the logical flow. But nevertheless, let's go back to the bracketed section. There was the Gemara described a woman who said that the pleasure she gets from intimacy will be usur if she puts on cosmetics. Kide Omar Rav Kahana. I hope everyone is with me. We went back up to the bracketed section. The Omar Rav Kahana, we have his name underlined. Hanoas Tashmishi Olecha. If a woman vows that the Hano, that her participation in intimacy provides to her husband, should be forbidden. Kaifu Mishamashtu, she has no right to vow that, to prevent him from benefiting from enjoying the intimacy. She can't impose a pleasure prohibition on him. So that if the vow is phrased like that, Hanoas Tashmishi Olecha, that the Hano of my intimacy that you get from me is forbidden to you, Kofa Mishamashto. Kofa, he forces her in the sense that he disregards that vow and has intimacy. However, Hanoas Tashmishcha Olai, and this is the phrase that was relevant to answer number two, just before the brackets, where she says, I prohibit myself from enjoying the intimacy that you provide me, Yofer. That kind of vow could take hold, and therefore the husband had better absolve it. Lefi she'ein machil l'odam dover asur lo. We don't feed a person something that's forbidden to eat. We don't put horse meat into someone's mouth. And likewise, we wouldn't allow a woman who prohibits herself from benefiting, from enjoying the tashmish, wouldn't allow him to have relations with her, because in effect he would be providing something that's forbidden to her. When a person vows, it's like you're making the item, the subject of the vow, like pork. You're making it usur. So we wouldn't allow them to continue in intimacy. We wouldn't allow them together. And therefore, he would have to absolve that. And if he doesn't, so then that's the subject of our Mishnah, of her having vowed, his remaining silent concerning a vow he could have absolved. And therefore, he would have to divorce her and pay her the ksuba based on all of the explanations we gave earlier. So just in summary of this fairly, let's say, involved or complicated section of Gemara, we had opened up with the issue of Shitas Reb Yossi concerning vows that are kishut oriented. And in our Mishnah gave us the impression that kishut type vows, according to Reb Yossi, is a type of vow a husband could absolve. We saw a source that indicated that Reb Yossi held otherwise. And we answered basically two approaches were given in the Gemara. One was that the vow of our Mishnah is the type of kishut of davarim shebeino leveina, and the second, and hence the Baal could be made for that. The second approach was that it's a standard. It in fact does deal with standard cosmetics. However, she tied it in to the issue of the intimacy, and since the vow would have activated an intimacy prohibition, that is reason for the Baal to be mefer. We continue in the Gemara. Rabbi Yisrael Rabbanis Shelos Nosan Kitzva. The Kamo Kitzva. Rabbi Yossi had said that if dealing with poor women that had made a vow concerning the non-use of kishutim, then and didn't state any time frame, then they are to be divorced immediately, leaving us to understand that if a time frame was given, they wouldn't be divorced immediately. The kama kitzva, how long is that set amount? That kitzva is a fixed amount of time. Om Revuta Mar Shmuel, you have here three approaches. One is Rav Yudah Mar Shmuel, Yud Beis Chodesh. If the vow says that for 12 months they will not use cosmetics, so we won't force them to split up. Rabba Bar Hanuma Rabbi Yochanan, Eser Shonim, 10 years. If she says, I won't use cosmetics for 10 years, so we will allow them to stay together. And by the way, when we say cosmetics, so you have to bear in mind the specific situation of cosmetics that we had answered before, above in the Gemara, where we had the inverted house markings 1 and 2. So, but we're just treating the Gemara in an abbreviated way by referring to cosmetics. And Number three, Rav Chisda Amar Avimi Regel. Regel means a holiday. The Shekein Benois Yisrael Miskashdois Beregel. It's the way of Jewish girls to use cosmetics on the holiday, so that if the vow is not to use cosmetics for the holiday, that's a fixed amount of time, and if that was how the vow was formulated, so we wouldn't force the couple to split up. Ubashirois shloishim yoim. In the case of wealthy women, if the vow was a vow of 30 days, then we say Yotzi v'itein ksuba. My shno shloishim yom. What's special about 30 days that we say that up till 30 days, so we won't force them to split up. Omar Abai Shikain isha chashuva nenis me'reach kishutao shloishim yom. This form of cosmetics will categorize as perfumes. And we say that important women, let's assume that that's associated with Ashiros, wealthy women, enjoy the fragrance of their cosmetics for 30 days. So that if she vowed not to use cosmetics for up to 30 days, during that whole period she's still enjoying her previous perfume application. Therefore, there's no need to separate the couple. But beyond 30 days, so the fragrance dissipates, so that it's not perceived anymore, and hence she would be divorced and paid her ksuba. The Mishnah. On the side, we have a topic heading, Nidorim Shoinim Shebal Madir Es Ishto. Different kinds of vows that we see a husband imposing on his wife. The Mishnah says, Hamadir es ishto shelo teleich lebeis oviha. A man imposed a vow which would result in preventing his wife from going to her father's house. Bizman shehu imo beir. If you're talking about a case where the father and the daughter, the married daughter, live in the same town, chodesh echad yikayim. If the vow is that you shall not go to your father's house for a month, so the couple will remain together. However, shnayim means 2 months, means above a month, yotzi v'yitein ksuba. That kind of vow is imposing too much restriction on the wife, and therefore they cannot continue living together. Ubizman shehu b'ir acheres, in a situation where the father lives in another town, then regel echod yikayim, Shloisha Yotzi Viteng Suba. If the vow is that for the next holiday, up till the next holiday, the vow is to be in force. So she knows that by the second holiday she'll be able to visit her father. So that's okay, and the couple can stay together. However, if he vows that for the next three holidays you are not to go to your father's house, then that is reason for splitting the couple up. There's an obvious problem in this Mishnah that you're giving me as a standard for keeping together one holiday, and for them splitting up three holidays, where does two holidays figure in this scheme? The Gemara will deal with that. Hamadir es ishto shelo teleich lebeis ha'ovel or lebeis ha'mishnah. Man who vows, who imposes a vow which would result in the wife not going to weddings, nor going to houses of mourning, yotzi v'yitein ksuba. These kind of vows also are grounds for splitting the couple up and husband paying the wife the ksuba. Nation noyel b'fanel. That's an expression that we'll see explained by the Gemara. Noyel literally means locking. You're locking the door in front of her. But as we said, the Gemara has to explain that. Vim hoya tayin mishum dover acher. If the husband was claiming the reason he's imposing this neder, that he doesn't want his wife to go to these places because of some other reason, the Rashi tells us the Gemara will explain that. Rashoi, then, he is allowed. It's not the kind of neder that would result in our splitting the couple up. Omar Law, a man says to his wife, again, in the context of a vow, he says, Almanas shetayri leploni ma she'amart li, o ma she'amarti loch. He says that the vow will not take hold on condition that you go and tell so-and-so that which you told me, or you tell so-and-so that which I told you. Oy shetein memale umare lashba, or it's a vow that's contingent upon her not doing this. If she doesn't fill up and spill out into the garbage. Now that's a literal translation. We're going to have to wait for the Gemara to deal with this. If you just catch a glimpse of Rashi, you'll see that all of these phrases, one after the other, Gemara Meforesh, Rashi says the Gemara will explain. So if he imposes this on his wife to be memale umara liashba yoytzi v'yitein ksuba. The Gemara. Ha gufa kasha. This Mishnah has an internal contradiction. Amris regel echod yikayim. He said that if the vow is to prevent the wife from going to her father's house for one holiday, up to one holiday, so the couple stays together. Now we can infer then from the resha, ha shnayim yotzi v'tein ksuba. If the vow would say that for the next two holidays you cannot visit your father's house, then that's too much strain, and he divorces her and pays the ksuba. Okay, that's the ratio. And you can see that we've used some markings to highlight the contradiction. And on the side under the Nosei Mivne Hene, you can see the crown shape and the dashed underlining. Diyukim soysrim b'reisha shel ha-mishna b'kama zman ha-neder shosur sara b'hagia v'esaviyo b'chozos lo megarshin. Contradictions regarding the amount of time that the neder would cover, which prevents her from going to her father's house, and nevertheless they would not get divorced. So from the Reisha, which spoke about 1 month, they would stick together. If it's only for 1 month, right, that is for one holiday period, so then the couple will stay together. But as we inferred, if it were 2 months, two holiday periods, then Yotzi v'tein ksuba, the husband has to divorce her and pay her the ksuba. Emo seifa. And then you continue in the reading of the Mishnah. It said, Shloisha yotzi v'tein ksuba. If the vow is going to prevent the wife from going to her father's house for three holidays, then the couple must divorce and he pays the ksuba, leaving us room to infer, ha shnayim yikayim. If the vow covered only two holiday periods, then the couple is not to divorce. We have a contradiction then. What's the status of shnayim? And just looking at the dashed underline, you can see the contradiction. Omar Abaye, the first of a couple of approaches, Abaye says, Seifa ason lekehenes. The Seifa that spoke about shnayim yikayim is talking about a woman married to a kohen, v'Rebbe Yehuda hi. And this is in accordance with Rebbe Yehuda, who we saw in the Mishnah making a distinction between a husband who was a kohen versus one who was a non-kohen. As we've said in the past, if the husband is a kohen and he has to divorce his wife, he's not going to be able to remarry her. So therefore we give a longer amount of time for the couple to stay together before having the insistence upon a divorce. Rabo bar ulo omar lo kashyo kan biradufa kan bisheino radufa. The word radufa indicates someone who is running. If it's a woman that runs to her father's house on a regular basis, she enjoys going to her father's house. So then we would say shnayim yotzi, two holiday periods. That's too much of a restriction on a woman that's redufa. However, if it's a woman that doesn't visit her father on an ongoing, regular basis, she's not redufa, kan b'shein redufa, then we say that if the neder would cover two holiday periods, it's still tolerable. She doesn't go anyway that often to her father's house. Now, since we made reference to married couples, and we mentioned Redufa, the Gemara cites two psukim and explanations of the psukim that you'll see have relevance to the topic we've been discussing. The pasuk says, "Also yisi be'enov k'moitzei shalom," and then I was in his eyes like someone that has found peace. What is that? It's a pasuk from Shir HaShirim, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Now Shir HaShirim, let's just mention, in general terms, is a biblical work that describes the connection, the bond, the love, the affinity, the longing between the Almighty and the Jewish people. So, with that general background in mind, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Kekalo Shenimseis Shlemo Beveis Chamiya, the pasuk is describing a situation, as I said, between the nation of Israel and the Almighty, like a bride who is very, Shlemo means is fulfilled, is happy in her, Beis Chamiya literally means in her father-in-law's house, but it means she's married, she's out of her father's house, she's married with her husband. As a result of her satisfaction, her happiness, she runs to her father to tell about how things are so good for her. There's another pasuk. V'hoyo biyomahu, num Hashem, tikri'i, ishi v'lo tikri'li od ba'ali. And there, a day will come that you will call me, again, a reference to the nation of Israel and the Almighty, that we will refer to the Almighty by the term ishi, and not use the term anymore ba'ali. What's the difference? Both words, ishi and ba'ali, have to do with, in English you would say, a husband. However, the word ishi, Rashi says, loshen ishus v'nisuin, a consummated, complete marriage. So the pasuk is saying the day will come that we'll have such a strong bond with the Almighty that will be like ishi and not refer to him anymore as ba'ali. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, kekala bebeis chamiya velo kekala bebeis aviya. Like a bride who has consummated her marriage. She's in beis chamiya, she's in her husband's or father-in-law's house with her husband, and not like a woman in the first stage of marriage where she's still at home. And Arusa is a woman, though she is married, she is still living in her father's domain. And this we've discussed many times in the past. We continue with more explanation of the Mishnah. Hamadir is Ishto. And the Mishnah had mentioned if he tries to restrict through a vow the wife's participation in going to a house of mourning, comforting the bereaved, or participating in weddings. So this is an intolerable situation. And the Mishnah said, it's like locking her up. So, Bishlama lebeis hamishteh. I understand that if one prevents his wife from participating in weddings, so Ika Noel Bifoneha. You have this idea of her being locked up. Rashi explains, Ika, we're at the top of Ayin Beis Omid Aleph, and we're looking at Rashi right now, at the top of Ayin Beis. Ika Noel Bifoneha, Deles Shel Simcha Upikuach Tsar. You're locking the door of joy and release of pain. It's a fascinating Rashi here that participation in weddings is associated with this term pikuach tzar. I mean, have to do with pikuach would be relieving one of pain. So we can understand that prevention of a woman, of a wife, from participating in weddings is a very heavy restriction upon her. But restricting her from going to the house of the bereaved. Okay, so what restriction does that impose on her? What's this idea of locking her up? So Tana, the Tanaic source, explains what the problem is. if this woman is viewed by the public now, they don't necessarily know what's going on, why it's happening, but she's a woman that doesn't go comfort the houses in houses of mourning. She doesn't go do pay shiva calls. She doesn't do nichum aveilim. She doesn't, as if in the eyes of the public, she doesn't care about people having died. So you know what? Lemochar himesa, the day's going to come, as it happens to all mortals, that she dies. Ve'en kobir yosofta, no one is going to come to eulogize her. Ve'iko diamri, ein kobir yosofta, no one's going to come to tend to her burial. There's something here between the lines that I think is worthy of just thinking about it. We're not going to expand on the topic, but we're saying that to prevent the woman from going to Beis Avel is ultimately going to result in something that we'll say is painful to her. It's called Noel Delis. We're locking her up, and what is that? Well, she's not going to have eulogies. She won't be buried. So that you could say, well, you know, when she dies, she's dead. Like, what difference does it make? So it could be that you can see here a reference between the lines that when a person dies, it doesn't mean that that's the end. There's still a neshama. There's a soul, and if the soul sees what's going on, the soul is affected by this kind of situation that the soul departs from the body and no one comes to eulogize and burial, the body is left there in shame. There are, of course, other approaches that one might suggest over here, but I'm just trying to share this particular approach with you now. Tanya, we continue with another Tanaic source. Hoya Rabbi Meir Omer, my diftiv toiv lo leches el beis ovel mi leches el beis hamishte, ba'asher hu soif kol odom v'achai yitein el libo. This pasuk in Koheles says that it's better to go to the house of a mourner than to participate in weddings, when recognizing that the situation of mourning and bereavement is the end of all people. And the pasuk says v'achai yitein libo. My v'achai yitein libo. What does that mean? That the living should pay attention to this. The answer is devarim shel misa. We're dealing with matters that are death related. Desafad yisbedunei. One who eulogizes others will merit being eulogized. Dekavar yitbirune. One who assists in burials will merit being buried. Diodel yidlune, one who enables or causes others to cry in their eulogizing will be cried for upon his passing. Delavoy yilavune, one who accompanies the dead from where they're located till the grave, so they will also merit being accompanied. The Toan Yitanune, one who helps carry the coffin or the stretcher upon which the deceased is, will merit being carried eventually. V'im hoya toyein mishum dovor acher rashoi. If the husband in creating a vow and stating a vow that results in the wife's prevention from participating in weddings or houses of mourning, and he says, well, because of Dover Acher, I'm imposing this vow, so then he's allowed to. It's an acceptable situation. So he's giving a reason why he doesn't want her going there. My Dover Acher, what is this other matter? Omer of Yudah, Omer Shmuel, Mishum b'nei Odom Prutzim Shemitzuyin Sham. The husband is worried about the presence of lewd individuals, immoral individuals that are present there. Omer of Ashi lo amoron elo dischazik. This that we've said that he's allowed to impose this restriction is so only if it's an established fact, or it's a known phenomenon of the prutzim being there. Avol lo ischazik if it's not known, it's not known that proofs him that the immoral people would be over there, lo kol kamine. It's not within the husband's power to impose a restriction, just that because he has some type of paranoia over that. That's not enough reason for him to restrict his wife's participation. The imam our law almanas she toimri, if the husband says that he imposes a vow that will take effect if she doesn't say what he told her, what she told him. What's the problem? Let her say to the others what he told her. Why should and by doing so the vow won't take effect. What's the whole problem here? Why is there a problem? Why would we worry about her telling someone over what she was told? Omar of Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, Devorim shel kalon. We're talking about matters that are shameful. So he's putting his wife in an impossible situation where if she doesn't say over the Devorim shel kalon, so then the neder that the husband imposed will take effect, and the neder will prevent the couple from continue living together as a husband and wife. And if she does say over, so she's subjecting herself to shame. Therefore, a neder like that is reason for splitting up the couple. The Mishnah also said, Oshite mimalo mara lashba, or a neder that is contingent upon her not doing this. So the Gemara asks, "V'netevet, so let her do it, and the neder won't take effect. The vow won't take effect." Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Shetei Mimala V'nofetzes. What the husband is asking her to do, in order for the neder not to take effect, is Mimala V'nofetzes. Rashi explains on the first narrow line, Le'achar Shetishamesh V'yamale Rachmo Shechvazera Torutz Bragleo T'nafzenu Shelo Yikloi V'tesaber. It's a reference to a behavior, a practice that he insists on her doing immediately after their intimacy with one another. What Rashi described is immediately after the intimacy, when the man's seed is in the woman's, in the wife's body, she would have to jump up immediately after that and run, thereby releasing all the male seed from within her, thereby preventing her from ever becoming pregnant. That's a very unreasonable thing to request of her, and therefore to just suggest, well, let her do that and the vow won't take effect. What are you saying to do something so undesirable? B'masnisa tana, in a Tanaic source, this is explained in a Braisa, the Mishnah of Mimalo Mara is explained. What does it say in the Braisa? Shetamale asora kade mayim v'tara lashba. That the husband is saying that if you don't fill up 10 pails of water and throw them into the garbage, so then the neder will take effect. And therefore the suggestion that we say, let her do it and the neder won't take effect, is unreasonable. So Bishlamo l'Shmuel. Shmuel was the number one answer of Yudam or Shmuel. So I understand, according to Shmuel, Mishum Hachi Yoytzi V'yiteng Tsuba. We understand why it's such an unreasonable thing for her to, after the intimacy, do what we described before. A couple like that cannot be expected to remain together, so he has to divorce her and give her the Tsuba L'masnisa. But according to the explanation in the Braisa, my Nafka Lo Mina Tavid. Again, you see the same question that's been repeated already a few times. Well, so let her do it. Omar Rabo Bar Barchana Omar Rabbi Yochanan Neshenires Keshoita. Filling up pails of water one after the other and tossing them into the garbage pail, into the garbage dump each time, would make her appear as an insane or an idiot in the eyes of onlookers. So how you can't expect a woman to to do that just to avoid the activation of the vow. Omar Rav Kahana, Hamadir es ishto shelo tish'al v'shelo tash'il. A man who imposes a vow on his wife that would in other words, the vow would be activated if she were to not conform to his request of do not borrow from others, do not loan out to others. Napa ukvara v'rechayim v'tanur. These are different household utensils or vessels. A napuk for a different type of sifting devices. Rechayim is a grinder. Tanur is an oven. So if a husband restricts his wife through a vow from loaning or borrowing these things, yoytzi v'yitein suba, that's reason for this couple to split up. Shame ra b'shenoseha. A woman who will say has no neighborly contact in this capacity. She doesn't loan anything to the neighbors. She doesn't borrow from them. The husband's imposing upon her a bad name in the eyes of the neighbors. Once again, you see insights here. They're very, very profound social comments. And from time to time, we try to point these things out in Gemara markings. When you learn a Daf Gemara, don't just learn it and translate it again on with the show. Think about the depth of some of these observations, some of these comments. They illustrate the essence and the root of the human psyche. And if we would only be successful in absorbing some of these messages, we would know how to avoid many pitfalls that are common to the human experience. Tanyo Nami Hochin, we have a braisa that supports this teaching of Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana being an Amora, it's very beneficial to have a higher authority supporting his ideas. So you have a braisa that says, Amadir Sishto, one who imposes a vow on his wife, Shelo Tish'al v'Shelo Tash'il, that she shall not borrow, but she shall not loan out to others. Napu kvar reichaim v'tanur, yoytzi v'yiteng suba meshimasiyo shem ra b'shcheino seha. V'chein hi shenodra, likewise the woman who herself vows, shelo tish'al v'shelo tashil, that she will not borrow nor loan to others. Napu kvar reichaim v'tanur, v'shelo taroy begodin noyim levonov. Or she vows not to knit or to weave nice clothing for his children. Teitze shelo b'ksuba. She is to be divorced and not receive a ksuba payment. Neshimasi osoi shame ra b'shcheino. Because through that type of behavior, she's creating a bad name for the husband amongst the neighbors. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.